welcome to another fabulous episode of All the Vegas, presented by Las Vegas Weekly Magazine and The Space, the home of Monday's Dark at Polaris and Harmon, just off the world-famous Las Vegas Strip. The more I get to know the Vegas entertainment scene, Mark Chinook, the more I really love the people.
Did you like my little when you said like Vegas those. Entertainment scene? My reaction was
That was a grunt of approval.
I'm not sure yet. We'll see.
I'm saying the people are nice. That's what I'm saying. There's only a few jerks. Most people are really cool behind the scenes. There is actually, though, there's one particular kind of entertainer that I find fascinating, and it's magicians. And that's because when you meet a magician, it's either the sweetest, nicest, most genuine person you're ever going to meet, or they're a little bit of a weirdo. And I'm using that word nicely. I think that's a diplomatic term.
I thought you were going to name drop and say, or you're an asshole, like beep.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay. No, that you could have, though.
That would be bad.
We might have get another listener if you do that.
One more?
Yeah, one more.
It's true, though. It's true. Magicians are something. Something else. Today's guest definitely falls into the first category.
Good cover. For good sure. Save. Good save.
She is a very kind and talented and super sharp performer who's been building her name at the Westgate over the last year. She just signed on for 2 more years in the Westgate Cabaret, and she's the only female magician currently headlining at a major Vegas property. It's Jen Kramer. Welcome to All the Vegas, and thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for that kind intro. I appreciate it.
I wasn't sure which direction he was going. I assumed it was going to be the good one.
I wasn't sure where I was going either.
I wasn't sure either. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here. I'm excited to chat with you guys.
Congrats on the extension, 2 more years. That's awesome news.
Thank you so much. I am excited for the next 2 years. I love getting a chance to be at Westgate, and can't wait to have you guys back at the show.
What is it like being at Westgate? You're the second Westgate Jen we've had on our show this year. We had Jennifer Romas from Sexy the Show
to
kick off the year. So that's pretty cool.
But Jen at the Westgate.
That's right. We talked a little bit with her, too, about just the legacy of entertainment at this property, and it's hard for other places to compete with that. What's it like to be a part of that now?
It's an amazing place. I'm so honored to be a part of it. When you think about the history at the property, it's the 50th anniversary of the property this year, which is an exciting milestone. And you think of performers like Elvis, who did hundreds of shows there, and Barbara Streisand. I mean, the real legends have performed on property, and it's so exciting. I'm really humbled to get a chance to perform at Westgate and be a part of the wonderful Westgate family.
It's a really cool spot. I like the Westgate a lot. The history, you know, obviously goes without saying, but it's a great property.
Definitely. And the other shows, you mentioned Jen's show. I love seeing the other shows on property, too, the current shows. We've got Barry Manilow.
Barry's there.
The Sexy Show. We've got George Wallace.
So. George is back.
Yes.
What's his tagline? He's got a funky tagline.
He might have several taglines.
Yeah, he's taking a dig, I think, at some people in town with his new tagline. I like George, too. He's very funny. Didn't he just open for Celine?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. The
Her final performances. How cool is that? Wallace.
Jen, you have been enthralled by magic forever, pretty much, right? You got started at a really young age. How did that happen, and how is it that it has continued to hold your interest all these years?
So for my 10th birthday, my Uncle Steve gave me a gift. It was a book called The Royal Road to Card Magic. And because card magic is what first piqued my interest, I love it to this day. And I think it ultimately, for me, is about connecting with people. Yeah, I think about why I love magic. I think about why I'm excited to get on stage every night. And it's because, you know, every night is a new experience for kind of genuine human connection with the audience and being able to share the experience of wonder. I think there's this really cool thing about magic where it has the ability to inspire wonder. It makes people feel like they're 5 years old again. Yeah, they're kind of seeing the world through a new lens. And I think that's awesome. I think it is so much fun to get the chance to share that with people.
Mark, didn't your Uncle Steve give you something also that inspired your career?
That was...
Damn it, I couldn't get it out without laughing.
Oh, man. Oh,
just feel like every entertainer has an Uncle Steve, and that's how they got to where they are. That's
I'm not sure what my Uncle Steve gave me, though. I try to suppress those memories, keep them hidden and locked away.
We're bad. We're bad people.
We're terrible.
I remember, Jen, the first time I interviewed you, you told me about a trip that you took with Magicians Without Borders, which I wasn't sure was a real group when you first told me about it, but it is, in fact, actual. But you went to India and performed over there, and what was that like?
It was such a rewarding experience. So I have admired the work that Magicians Without Borders does ever since I was a kid, and I've loved getting the chance to work with them through the years. And this India trip was a special one because it was two groups that I really loved. It was Magicians Without Borders and the Yale Magic Society, which is a group I started when I was a student at Yale. So all these magicians from these two groups came together.
Wait a minute. You went to Yale? We could have a whole show about Yale. I got Yale stories.
I want to hear your Yale stories, Mark.
Uncle Steve won't let me talk about them. So just for people listening, Magicians Without Borders, for the person out there, the common person, that's kind of like Doctors Without Borders,
exactly.
But for magicians, right?
Absolutely. So they travel all around the world, often to places where people are facing some really difficult, some really challenging situations, and they perform magic, and they spread hope and spread happiness, and they really, really use their magic for good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And now, it was
there's
amazing.
No degree at Yale for magic. Is there a master's in magic offered by Yale?
So there's not a formal course of study in magic. Although Yale, it's practically like Hogwarts, right? It's got the Gothic architecture, that kind of Harry Potter vibe. But there is no official magic class. There is now the Magic Society.
So what were you enrolled in at Yale? What was your
So I majored in theater studies.
Okay.
Figured theater and magic. There's a lot of overlap. And my professors were great. They really let me incorporate magic and encouraged me to incorporate magic into a lot of what we did theater-wise. My senior project was an experimental magic show. So it was
that's incredible.
There's definitely a lot of magic in my Yale experience.
Yale theater and acting program is no joke. It's legit. Congrats.
Thank you.
Now
so
I'm even
much.
A bigger fan. We're going to the Westgate tonight.
Well, it sounds like you pursued theater in college as an extension of what you maybe already knew you wanted to do, or at least attempt to do, right?
So I knew I loved magic. I knew it was something that I was really interested in pursuing full-time after graduation. And I think for me, those college years were about figuring out, how do I take this thing I love and turn it into a full-time profession? You know, how do I practically make that happen? Mm-hmm. And so I took an internship. I interned for Nathan Burton over two summers when I was in college to get a feel for what the Vegas showbiz world was like. I had only been here briefly previously to that. And it was a great experience and learned a lot and started reaching out to different places during my junior and senior years to pitch the idea of doing a show out here. And then when I graduated, I thought, okay, if there's any time in my life to take a risk and do this thing I love, I thought this is the moment to do it. So I moved out to Vegas and started doing a weekly show, which about a month later turned into two weekly shows, and soon after three weekly shows, and did corporate events and traveled for college shows. And it's about 5 years later now, and I love getting a chance to be part of the Vegas community. I really love it out here.
Hmm. When you were at Yale and you're studying theater, obviously there's the core there is the acting program, right? Like you're the theater acting, schmacting. How much of that is in your show now? Like, do you feel like you're just being yourself out there when you're doing your show, or is there a part of you that is sort of playing a character and you are acting a little bit? Because as a performer, as an actor, I'm interested now because I'm thinking of other magicians that I'm friends with or I've seen perform, and now I'm questioning, is that really who they are or are they acting? And I know a couple of them outside of their work, and they definitely carry a stage persona. But for you, is that there as well, or is it pretty much I'm Jen and I'm just going out and doing magic?
Oh, it's such an interesting question because I think to myself all the time, like, how do I create the best experience for the audience? And so I want to be really intentional about kind of how I show up on stage. And I think my stage persona is similar to who I really am because I think that kind of allows me to be more real with the audience and more genuine and kind of creates that real connection that we were talking about. I'd say, you know, maybe a slightly more outgoing or polished or prepared in that I've really thought about the scripting and I've thought about kind of how everything will go. So sort of like the slightly more more prepared in the sense of like more rehearsed in that every sentence is kind of planned before I go on stage version of myself, but ultimately the same person. You know, I think the same energy, the same, you know, if you meet me off stage versus on stage, maybe you'll get a slightly more outgoing version on stage, but I'm the same person.
Yeah, that makes sense. Prepared. Key word is prepared. I like that.
That's a really good question, actually. That's a really good thing to discuss because there probably aren't very many entertainers in town who do get a chance to be themselves on stage. I mean, probably comedians get to do that a lot more, but like Mark, what you've done most of your career, you're never yourself.
No, it's always some, you know, you're playing a character, you're playing a role. You cannot not bring who you are to the role. And I think especially in the Broadway world, when you see somebody else take over the role or, you know, five or six incarnations of that same character in a long running Broadway show where actor after actor comes in every other year or every 2 years, you can't help but see who that person is. And that's just part of the craft and the process where you are bringing your personal self to that character. But I have met some cool magicians in town and, it's interesting now to think about it. I've never really thought about it before because, you know, I've hung out with, you know, Chris Angel a bunch. I've met and hung out with David Copperfield and thinking about how they are on stage and now thinking about our engagement in a, not a private place, but in a social, they're kind of one and the same. You know, like, I don't think they differ too much from their magic man. It's cool.
It's a fun world to be a part of, definitely. And I think there are some performers who really do embody a character and they create this character and this character is like has certain traits and they really kind of step on stage and are that character. But for me, I think it's just about it's about being who I am and I really just want to create a fun experience for the audience. So I think for me, if I can just go on stage and be totally present and in the moment and reacting in real time, you know, that in my mind is what will really help them walk out of the theater thinking, oh, that was awesome. I had a blast. I, you know, forgot my worries and just leaving with a smile. So.
Now, who were some of your, I guess, influences and like other magicians or other performers that you looked up to? Because as I mentioned, there aren't any other female magicians right now doing big things on the strip. I'm sure there are a lot out there that maybe I just don't know about yet, but I don't think there have been a lot, just period. I mean, I always think about, like, Melinda, the First Lady of Magic from years ago, headlining in Vegas. But it's just not a lot of – there's not a lot of women doing it. So did you look up to other magicians or other female performers and other – or was that not an issue when you were doing it? Or how did that come along?
So it definitely has historically been a male-dominated field. But I do want to recognize there are amazing women doing really cool work and really exciting work in magic, both in the past and currently. And I think magic is moving in a direction where more women are becoming involved, which is great to see. And I'm so supportive of other women in magic. And I think as a kid, though, when I first got started in magic, I just didn't really know of any women in magic. They certainly existed. They were doing great work. But the magicians who I knew who were really the role models to me were the magicians I'd see on television, the David Copperfield, Penn and Teller, David Blaine. Tom and Janet Verner of Magicians Without Borders were great role models to me because I saw them really using magic to make a positive difference in people's lives. And to me, that was so inspiring. I knew that was something that I was passionate about and that I always wanted to be a part of my life, too. So those were really my role models. And
try to find a magician who like intentionally wants to make a negative impression on people's lives.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting though, because you know where we are in today's society with, you know, not too long ago, the Me Too movement being at the forefront of society. You couldn't open your Facebook page or your Instagram page without it being there. Just yesterday, I hosted an event for Top Rank, and Michaela Mayer is one of our fighters, and she's fantastic. She's an undefeated pro, and you know, I made a point of going through the crowd, and there was this family with two young girls, and we brought them into the ring so she could meet them. And these girls were just in awe of, you know, standing in front of a professional female athlete. And we've talked about this a lot with the WNBA coming to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid watching sports, I didn't realize as a young man that I had the opportunity or the dream to say, I want to be like Mike. Girls never had that. And now with WNBA's dominance in basketball, like, it's just such a huge thing in society. And we had Aja Wilson on recently, and I asked her the same question. I said, how cool is it that you're playing a sport, and she's not an old woman, she's young. She's a young kid that, you know, she was in college, she was in high school, and she said, I want to be like whoever that first female professional basketball player was. It's such a cool dynamic and thing that we're seeing now where young girls have people like you to look up to and say, hey, I want to be a magician. Because like Brock said, there are no female headlining magicians in Las Vegas other than yourself. And as an outsider to Vegas, having been here only 6 years, my perception of magic and where people go to become the greatest magicians is Las Vegas. You know, like, there's no other place on the planet that embraces your craft like Las Vegas, in my opinion. So, first of all, congratulations. And I guess the question is, how cool is that for you to know that, A, you're a headliner in Las Vegas, B, you're a woman, and C, these kids now look up to you and have somebody who's in the entertainment world, in the magic world, that they can be like, hey, I want to be like Jen.
Thank you for that.
well, no, it's
an amazing, definitely a rewarding experience. Like, we do our meet and greet after the show every night, and I just think role models are so important in any field, no matter what you're doing. And so it's exciting to see, you know, how they're sort of, there's this increasing number of women in magic, and I think that will only encourage more young girls and women to become magicians and to see it as an option. And so at our meet and greet every night, it'll happen all the time that a little girl will come up to me, she'll give me a hug, she'll say, oh, that was so cool, I would love to become a magician now, or oh, I can't wait to learn magic, or this is something that I'm interested in. And I'd love to be that positive role model and to be someone who, you know, young girls can hopefully look up to and sort of an example of someone who is doing magic and shows them something that they could potentially do if it interests them. And I would love to hopefully be a positive role model for.
On the other side of that, have there been moments in your career where getting to this point, you felt like, hey, I'm not being taken seriously because I'm a woman? Like, were there moments along the way where, like, hey, man, you just did a 2-year extension at the Westgate. Like, this is a huge deal. But were there ever times where you felt like, oh, shit, what the hell am I doing? And you're just hitting roadblocks because of the fact that you're a woman?
I've been really fortunate in that growing up in magic, the people I was surrounded by were incredibly supportive and still are. And that's something where I really recognize how important that is, and I'm so grateful for those people in my life. And I think as a kid, you know, I have memories being 13, 14 years old, like calling up the local Barnes & Noble bookstore saying, you know, hey, I'd love to perform. Can I come do a show? And, you know, I wanted to work for free. I wanted to do a show on, you know, that little children's stage in the, like, kids department where they do story time. I was like, hey, this is a great opportunity to get what Lance Burton would call, like, that flight time, mm-hmm. you know, just going out there and performing and getting experience in front of real people. And so, you know, I think when I was that age, when I was doing those shows and doing birthday party gigs or bar and bat mitzvahs or, you know, just sort of the New York party circuit, I could see how as a 13-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old, you know, at that age, someone might have initially had some, you know, they might look at me and think, well, this isn't what in my mind kind of the image of a magician is. You know, I'm thinking of a guy with a top hat and a rabbit and a wand. So I could see initially them thinking this just isn't what I had in mind. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately you prove yourself. I think, you know, you go in there and you do great work, and they hopefully, you know, are able to form an opinion of you based on the work that you've done and what you're bringing to the table. So I'm just grateful to kind of have great people around me and to be able to do this thing I love.
I love the fact that you said when you started, you work for free, because this is something that a lot of entertainers, I think, understand. And I hear it more and more from entertainers who have reached a certain point in their careers. You know, because I look back on my days in New York when I was struggling as, you know, kid out of college, and you're bartending and waiting tables wherever you can just to keep your nights free or your days free to audition. And the fact that you said, oh, I just wanted to work. I just wanted to work on my craft. I think that's a testament, and it speaks volumes for who you are as an entertainer, not just as a person, but as an entertainer, and why you're at the level of success you're at. Oh, you know, we hear, like, that's just something that you don't hear often, and it's refreshing to hear in the entertainment world.
Yeah. I mean, Vegas is definitely the magic capital of the world.
Gotta be, right?
If you're going to do this, you're coming to Vegas at some point, or else you're not going to do it, right?
It is the magic mecca. And I remember when I was in college making that decision, thinking to myself, okay.
How do I get here?
I thought, like, I love magic. I know this is something that I want to pursue, but where's the best place to do it? And at the time, I had grown up in New York. I was part of a young magicians group kind of through my teenage years in Manhattan. And all my, you know, most of my contacts at that point were on the East Coast and in New York. And so I think that was why I decided to take the internship in Vegas. So I had this sense Vegas really is a magic capital. It is this magic mecca. It's this amazing place where, you know, there are more magicians per square foot in Las Vegas than anywhere.
Yeah, I think I got one living in my garage.
Probably do.
Steve.
It's your Uncle Steve?
Uncle Steve's in the garage.
He's back. But when you are here in Vegas doing magic, you have to stand out, right? There is a lot of competition, so you have to come up with fresh material and new stuff that people haven't seen before, or at least do it in ways that people haven't seen before. What's your process like when you're putting together maybe building a new illusion or just figuring out something new to do in your show?
The first thing I'll do is think about what the ideal experiences that I'm trying to create. So let's say I'm working on putting a new illusion in the show. I'll dream up, okay, this is, you know, in a totally ideal world where I'm not thinking of the method of how we accomplish it or what's involved or the logistics, just what do I want to happen, right? And then once I kind of have an image of that, then I'll start thinking, well, how do we make it happen? You know, what are those methods? How do we, you know, and also how does it fit in with the flow of the rest of the show? Because, you know, you want to create a whole experience for the audience rather than just a bunch of disjointed things. So I'll think to myself, okay, how does this new thing that I want to incorporate, where do I put it into the show? How do I transition from what's before it and what's after it? Where does it belong? How does it kind of thematically work into the show? And it's a team effort for sure. Like, one of the things I love about Las Vegas is that because there are so many interesting creative people out here, magicians, consultants, directors, it means that when I'm working on a creative problem, there are amazing people I can consult with. And being able to work with them has been amazing. It's been really collaborative, being able to help them with projects they're working on, and they can help me with things I'm working on and learn from each other. And it's really kind of a mutually beneficial and it makes it fun getting a chance to work with other people, having it be a team effort. Mm-hmm.
Is the magician community in Vegas seem pretty close? And it sounds like they're more supportive than anything else, but
yeah, it's been a tight-knit community.
You can be honest.
Well, I'm sure that it's competitive, but supportive also.
Well, there's a couple that spat in the news. I see it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It happens.
I love it. I'm not saying any names.
I mean, hey, in my experience, of course, it's, you know, there is some competition, but I think for the most part, at least in my experience, it's been a really supportive community. You know, other magicians will come out to my show to support me. I'll go to their shows to support them. We'll work with each other on things collaboratively. And I love that. I think it really is a tight-knit community. I think, you know, magicians will hang out for fun in their spare time because they enjoy spending time with each other, and they have this thing in common that they love. I mean, that's another cool thing about magic is no matter where in the world you go, you have this common bond with someone if you're both magicians. You both know that, hey, this is something I've invested time in. This is something
a union?
I love. Like,
is there a magicians union? Like the Screen Actors Guild.
Just magicians.
Yeah. Because, you know, I've been to Los Angeles. I lived in L.A. for a long time, and I was fortunate enough to hang out at the Magic Castle a bunch.
Yeah, like, I was just there performing a couple months ago.
That is the coolest spot ever. So if, like, you ever get to go to L.A. and you text somebody and try to get into the Magic Castle, because that's a hang, and that's legit. And it seems like it's the who's who of the magic world.
It's a special place for sure. I mean, I love that you walk in and there's, you know, kind of like here we're recording at the space. And I was saying before we started recording, Mark was showing me around and I was like, there's just a cool vibe to this place. It's artsy. It's fun. It's the kind of place you want to come and spend time. And I think the Magic Castle, while it has a different vibe from the space, is similar in that it's a unique place. It's a place where they really create an atmosphere.
Yeah, you want to be there.
And yeah, it's like this Victorian style mansion. You kind of feel like you've time traveled and everybody's all dressed up, and it's definitely a special environment. And being there performing in April was such a blast because, you know, I got the chance to perform, which is something I always love doing, but also just connecting with other magicians and other performers and people out there
was that your first time performing there? Because I know that's like you get invited to perform there and then you've done that and then you've kind of joined this somewhat exclusive club of magicians, right? Mm-hmm.
It was, and I was very excited to get the chance to do it.
Yeah,
I had
great.
A blast.
Awesome.
I did 3 shows a night, so 21 shows throughout the week.
Wow. How long's a show? How long's a set? There, not here.
So our set's about 18 minutes.
Okay.
So yeah, definitely shorter than the 75-minute show I do here, for sure.
Is there anything that you can tell us that went completely wrong on stage? Because I live for those moments when I'm doing a show where, you know, if I forget my words or a prop isn't there or a set piece breaks or the sound or lights go screwy and it's just stuff that's beyond your control. Has there ever been a moment on stage where you pull the rabbit out of the hat and there's no rabbit? Like, does stuff like that happen often or not often, hopefully? What's something you can share that was...
So our show involves a lot of audience participation, and I think whenever you have audience members involved in the show, it's both exciting because it means every night show really is a little bit different because every audience is different, and, you know, audience members will say unexpected things, do unexpected things all the time. I mean, you think you're calling people up on stage. We're doing, you know, we just had our 200th show last week, so when you're doing, you know, so many shows and you have different people involved every night, and we'll involve, you know, several people throughout the show every single night. So I can think of times when, you know, people have said things I haven't expected. And I think those moments have been fun, too, because there have been times when people have said things that are so genuinely funny that I've really been just laughing, thinking this is hilarious. And I think the audience can sense that, oh, this is a real moment happening. And then I'll think to myself, okay, that was a great moment. That was a cool experience for everyone involved. How do I recreate that and kind of, you know, create the environment and kind of create the situation where this can happen again? And so sometimes that's possible, and we can sort of work that in and create a joke or a moment. But, oh, yeah, all kinds of unexpected things happen. And people ask all the time as a magician, you know, what do you do if something goes wrong or if something goes the way that you're not expecting? And my answer to that is that I think as a magician, it's so important to think through the many possible things that could happen throughout the course of a routine so that you're kind of prepared for those unexpected moments, which inevitably will happen. If you do enough shows, unexpected things are going to happen. It's live theater. You guys know. I mean, you're in the entertainment world. Stuff happens. And I think it's just about kind of beforehand thinking, okay, what do I do if this happens? What do I do if that happens? And then if something happens that you haven't even taken into account, you kind of have a game plan because you've thought of other situations and how you might handle them. So, for instance, like, I'll have things hidden on stage that nobody even knows those things are there. But they're kind of things that I can go to. If something ever were to not go exactly as expected, I can kind of pull in these backup things that people think they're just a part of the show. The audience, from their perspective, they'd have no idea. And, you know, we haven't really had to pull in those things, but just having them there is, I think, comforting because, you know, hey, no matter what happens, no matter what unexpected thing someone says or does, like, you're covered. You know, you've got something where you can, you know, bring the routine to a successful
conclusion. That's good planning right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I always think of those moments. It's that payoff moment where you're like, it's the King of Spades. And they're like, no, it was the Jack of Hearts. And it's like, what happens when that happens? You know, I'm like, oh, well, that trick didn't work. On to the next one. Try the veal. I'm here all week.
But I think that's just it. Like, it's about being kind of a few steps ahead so that you realize that something has gone off track way before the audience has any clue that anything has happened. So then you're able to salvage the situation. Because I think that for a magician would be like the worst possible thing, right? Like to actually have a go. So the idea is, all right, you realize like something might not be going quite as planned, but you have time to rectify the situation before the audience has any clue that anything has gone wrong. So from their perspective, like everything should seem seamless, right? Like you might have a story to tell after the fact, but like from the audience's point of view, they think everything's gone just fine. From their, you know, they don't know what's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. They don't know what's going to happen. So
that's one of the things I love in your show, and not to give things away, but there are moments where it seems like things are not going to, like the solution to the problem is not going to reveal itself, or she's not going to come up with the right answer.
She's
actually led you down an entirely different road where you don't, you know, something else is going to happen that you haven't even thought of.
It's in your jacket pocket.
Like that.
Yes.
Not quite.
Can't wait.
It's good. Your show's got a lot of heart, too. That's why I love it. I mean, it's great that it is a family-friendly show. I don't think we can have enough of those in Vegas. It's always good to have more options for the all-ages crowd, especially now in the summertime. It's the perfect time to go take the whole fam to see something. But, yeah, it's just there's just a lot of positivity in your show, which is, I think, a little bit refreshing. There's not, you know, a lot of shows have that inherently in the music or whatever is going on, but maybe that's just your personality coming out in your show.
Oh, thank you, Rock. I really appreciate that. I want to create a show that is positive, that has that kind of upbeat energy to it. And I love that it is a show that you can bring the whole family to. I think that to me is important too, because, you know, to be able to create a show that is not just for kids, but also not just for adults. It's something that, you know, hopefully the 7-year-old will enjoy and the 70-year-old will enjoy as well. So.
I'm magic illiterate, but I love magic shows. And Mack King is one of my favorites on the strip, too.
He's amazing.
He's been doing it for a long time, and he's incredible. And he fits that mold as well, where, you know, adults can go and you can grab a cocktail and have a great time. And then you see kids there, and he knows exactly how to walk that line, knowing that there's kids in the room as well, and it's family friendly. And these shows are all incredible. And again, when I say I'm magic illiterate, it's just because I can never figure it out. I'm like so blown away by what's going on. I'm like, how the F did that just happen? And then I get angry and I go drink more, and then I call Brock and cry on the phone. I'm like, Mac had a jellyfish or whatever the hell it is, a goldfish. I don't know how. Anyway, I can't wait to see your show. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going.
I can't wait to have you there.
No, I'm excited because the Westgate, like I said, is one of my favorite properties. I want to convince somebody to let me up into the Elvis suite so I can reenact the Liberace hot tub scene or whatever it is.
Yeah, we're going to pass on that.
Matt Damon. Brock and I are going to do a photo shoot. No, we're going to do a photo shoot. You just don't know it yet. I'm going to dress up as Liberace, and you're going to play the Matt Damon character.
Great.
We're going to fill the bathtub full of foam so they can't see the Adonis that I am.
Man, we are taking some strange turns.
It's magic. It's a magic show. It's magic. It's all an illusion. What do you mean I'm not Liberace?
All under one roof.
That's right, at the Westgate. Brass toilets. That's all you need to know.
One thing I've never asked a magician that I've always wanted to is what kind of time is spent on, because it's practice, 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 right? Especially when you're doing card magic or any kind of sleight of hand stuff. That's just putting in the hours, right? I could do that maybe in theory if I stopped doing everything else and probably not.
Definitely not.
I think you'd be an excellent magician.
No, you're wrong.
I would come sit in the front row at your show, Brock. No doubt.
Maybe you can saw me in half. That would be a good way for me to contribute.
I'd love to be the guy who gets sawed in half. I think that actually
be cool. I'd love for you to get
sawed
in half, too.
Wow, we have two volunteers here. I'll keep this in mind, gentlemen.
Sometimes I look at you, and I think you already have been sawed in half.
That was very Forrest Gumpy right there. You know, it was like, that was kind of like Brock's version of life is like a box of chocolates.
We got another
when
t-shirt.
When I look at you, I kind of think you've been sawn in half.
We got a new t-shirt.
That's right. I've been sawn in half. Is and the it ba- sawn? The back, is that proper grammar?
The back of the shirt says there is no rabbit.
That's a good one.
No, really, though, Jed, one trick. What are we talking about? Like hours to get that thing perfect.
It definitely takes a lot of practice. I think it depends on what the particular trick is and what's involved. But I know, I mean, even growing up in magic, I remember keeping, you know, some people put like a pair of glasses in every room. Like I kept a deck of cards in every room. I kept one in my mom's car, one in my dad's car, one in this backpack, one in that purse, you know, one in every room I could think of. So that when you have those spare moments, you know, and you're sitting in the waiting room at the dentist's office and you just have a few minutes, you know, I could always pull out my cards and just practice. And I think those little moments here and there add up. And for me now, I even have like a bowl, you know, kind of like the kind of bowl you'd keep chips in, like if you were snacking and like watching a movie, except if I'm ever watching something or whatever, instead of like snacking on chips, I'll just like, it's a bowl filled with playing cards. Just like pick up a few, play with them, work on some slights, and it's fun.
She's got the lingo slights.
That's what would happen if I tried to become a magician. I would eat cards. You would just eat too many cards, and then I'd have to give it up.
Let's call it what it is. There's no practicing. I'm just going to snack today. Just going to snack.
We are having way too much fun, so it is time to stop having fun and get serious and give you the Vegas you need. Jen Kramer,
yes.
Would you please honor us with your choice for the Vegas you need?
After the show, what I love to do is right outside the theater, there is a row of restaurants. Westgate calls it like Restaurant Row, and I love grabbing a bite to eat there. There's Fresco Italiano, great Italian place. The owner, Dora, super cool, so warm, so welcoming. There's Edge Steakhouse, which is ranked number one on TripAdvisor. I mean, you know, incredible place. There's Benihana, which is like a dinner show experience. You can go restaurant hopping at Westgate. So I definitely recommend check out Restaurant Row.
Mm-hmm. Lots of good food in there. What's the name of the inside the Benihana Village? There's like a very Ken Bulky type of restaurant with where they're grilling everything. Barsaki. Yes. Thank you, Westgate, for reminding me about that place. That's great. There's a bunch of little other places to eat in the Benihana Village, different Asian food, too. There's a lot
sushi.
More going on in there than you think. Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Well, definitely. I think, you know, obviously the convention center is right there. So, you know, the people that are just always at the Westgate, the restaurant selections are top-notch and always great. I'm excited to come and see your show, and I'm going to stake it out before. I'm going to come and steakhouse it.
We the should edge is really good, man.
That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited.
It's delicious.
I'm excited.
I'm hungry, too. Mark, what's your choice? Don't make it a food thing because I'm already hungry.
I'm not going to make it a food thing. I'm actually going to make it an experience thing. Maverick Helicopters. They have been an incredible supporter of Monday's Dark, always donating, you know, a gift certificate for a helicopter experience. They offer one experience in particular, I said particular,
mm-hmm.
Where you actually go in the helicopter and then they take you to the Grand Canyon. You land in the Grand Canyon, you get out of the helicopter and you have like lunch, champagne, strawberries. It is I probably, if there's like an extreme epic date to be had in Las Vegas, I would imagine that would be one of them. I've yet to do this. But everybody I know who has done it raves about it because when you come back from the date in the Grand Canyon, you're flying over the strip at dusk as all of the lights turn on. If that isn't cool, I don't know what is. My wife will not do it with me because she's petrified of helicopters, but I've reassured her that they have named a helicopter after me. There is a Chinook helicopter. So nothing is going to happen. Did you know that there's a helicopter called a Chinook? It is a military helicopter with the double thingies.
That's not named after you.
It sure is. They said that guy in Rock of Ages, let's give him a helicopter. It was my first big get in life. Give him a chopper. Whoa. Call it the Chinook. No, it's spelled completely different. C-H-I-N-O-O-K. But it is the double prop helicopter one in the military. Anyway, my pick, my Vegas you need, is Maverick Helicopters, but not just the go see the strip helicopter ride. It's the one that takes you to the Grand Canyon. You go down in the Grand Canyon. Heyo. You have a date there. You come back and you see the lights come on. That, my friends, is the Vegas you need.
Ken, bookmark this part of the show because we do now have Mark recorded saying, my wife will not do it with me. So if we ever need to loop that or whatever, it's there. My pick.
What is it?
We've talked about this show a bunch on here. I've raved about it before, but I haven't officially made it a Vegas you need pick. So I'm going to do it now, and that's Boys to Men at the Mirage.
ABC, BBD.
They play in the Terry Fader Theater, and it's just an amazing show. They do all different kinds of music, not just their classic smooth R&B ballads that you remember them for. But also, like, you know, we talked about Celine. This is like a time of change for the whole residency scene in Vegas, and these guys have been here for a few years, and I don't think they're going anywhere. It's a great show, and it's one of those institutions at this point. Everybody needs to go check out Boys to Men at the Mirage back this month. Jen Kramer, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
It has. You can catch the magic of Jen Kramer at 5 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Is that right?
That's right.
At the Westgate Cabaret, which, if you haven't been to a show, a very cool kind of old school room. It's just, there's not a lot of places like that anymore. And very intimate environment. You could get a real close look at everything Jen is doing. There's no place for her to hide at all. And she will wow you. You can also keep track of everything Jen Kramer at magicofjen.com. Monday's Dark returns to the space July 15th, raising money for the Maximum Hope Foundation, and July 29th for the Las Vegas Rescue Mission. Get your tickets at mondaysdark.com. Las Vegas Weekly's annual Best of Vegas Party, celebrating our special awards issue and all of its winners, is coming up on July 18th. And if you're listening to this right now, you're invited. Only you, though. You mm-hmm. can't bring anyone. You have to come by yourself. Okay, fine. You can bring one person. Go to lasvegasweekly.com/bestofvegas to RSVP. Of course, you can go back and listen to every episode of all the Vegas podcasts, including our show with that other Westgate Jen, at allthevegas.com or on iTunes or on YouTube. Shoot us a message at allthevegas@lasvegasweekly.com if you want to complain or compliment us. Thanks once again to Jen Kramer. Thanks as always to Mark and Ken. And thank you for listening. Drive carefully. Come back soon.